Hello.
Hi, Mr. Sinneruth.
Yes?
Yes, hi, this is Michael Scott.
Yep. Michael, we're doing this on the phone, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so are we ready to go? I know I'm calling about 5 minutes early, so.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
I'm going to my office over here. So.
All right, are we ready to go?
Yes.
All right. Here we go. All right. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1. Hello, everybody, and welcome back once again to the Great Scott Podcast. Today, I am joined by Hall of Famer, legendary kicker, Mr. Jan Stenerud. How's it going, Jan?
It's going fine, thank you. A little bit warm, but it's okay.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Midwest.
So, Jan, you have a pretty interesting history. You actually came to the United States from Norway, and I think that the original intention before football came, it was to be a skier. And I think that skiing had ran in your family.
Well, not an intention. I was offered a ski scholarship. I was a promising, ski jumper in Norway. That was a national sport. It's always been a national sport, I suppose. And in 1962, I was 19 years old, and I had a real good season. And there was another Norwegian fellow at Montana State already there in ski scholarship. And he and the ski coach looked at some of the results from the Norwegian papers. And I wrote to about half a dozen of us, I believe. And I had always heard great things about the United States, obviously. I accepted immediately. I had an uncle and aunt that had immigrated to Buffalo, New York in the early 1920s. So they came back, every 50 years or so, back as I can remember, and always talked about the United States and the skyscrapers in New York and the big cars and the big country and all the great things in America. And I was always fascinated by that. So it didn't take me long to want to accept the scholarship. And my dad thought it was a good idea. It was a free education in a great country, and also my mother was a little bit hesitant. She thought maybe I would stay over here for some reason, but no, I came here to ski, and I got into the football situation. It was just total by happenstance, and that didn't happen to my senior year, but it just happened by, it just happened. I can tell you why if you want to.
No, that's fine. I mean, I wanted to ask you, I mean, are you glad that you picked football over skiing?
Well, the main reason I picked it, because it looked like after I kicked 1 year in college, I was drafted as a future draft choice by the Kansas City Chiefs. And that was explained to me that this is professional football, and you can actually get paid for just kicking the football. And if there was money involved in kicking at ski jumping, it would have been an amateur career, I suppose. But what happened was part of my workout for ski jumping and cross-country running was to run the stadium steps at Montana State, which I did almost every day in the fall, all the years I was there. And in the fall of 1964, my junior year, I was on the stadium steps, and the kicker on the team, and he also played defensive back, his name was Dale Jackson. He was on the field kicking field goals 2 or 3 times a week, and I had met him, and I went down there, and I thought, hell, I like to kick this ball. I had played a lot of soccer as a kid. I was on the team since I was, 8 years old, I think. I played on teams, and I played on the senior team in my hometown when I was a junior, so I was a pretty good soccer player. And I kicked with the toe like he did, and after about 5 or 6 attempts, I asked him, is it legal to kick with the side of your foot, like to take a corner kick or you basically kick a soccer ball? And I never forget the answer. He said, yes, you can. There's the guy for the Buffalo Bills. His name is Pete Gogolak. He kicks with the side of his foot. So I kicked a few, and I did that, at least once a week that fall. And unbeknownst to me, the basketball coach had seen me from his office window. And then he came down the field one day and watched me, and he ran over. His name was Roger Kraft. He was actually a K-Stater. He was the head basketball coach at Montana State in the early 60s. And he ran over to the football coach. His name was Jim Sweeney, who later coached for Washington State and also Fresno State and won over 200 games. And he ran over to Sweeney and said, Coach Kraft, the basketball coach, runs over to the football coach and said, hey, listen, there's a Norwegian ski jumper out there that's really kicking the football a long way. Joe, take a look at him.
Do you remember what your... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, the ski coach or the football coach wasn't too impressed with the basketball coach. He probably didn't know what he was talking about. And he did not really pay attention to that. But about 3 weeks later, on a Friday before the last home game of a Bobcat football team in 1964, the team was working out in the stadium and I was running the steps. I didn't pay any attention to them. But all of a sudden I can hear the football coach yell. He didn't know my name, so he just said, hey, skier, here you can kick. Get down here. We want to watch you kick. And that was my introduction and kicking the football for the first time in front of anybody.
When you got drafted, when you got drafted by the NFL, it wasn't just the Chiefs that I know that didn't just want you as their kicker. I know that the Falcons had also wanted to draft you, but it was mainly because of Coach Strahan that you chose the Chiefs, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, what happened was I went out for spring practice, and so my senior year was my first year on the football team. And I didn't know that I could get a scholarship for just kicking, but I changed my scholarship from skiing to football, although I did both. I was an All-American in 64 and 65 in skiing. And then, but anyway, so, but they had less ski scholarships than football scholarships. But what happened was the last game of the year, we played the University of Montana, the arch rival, the Grizzlies. And in that game, I kicked a 59-yard field goal. And that turned out, it took us about a week to find out, but that turned out that it broke the college record by 5 yards. And the pro record by 3 yards. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, a couple of weeks later, there's a telegram sent in my name, care to Montana State Athletic Department. And it was sent by Jack Stedman, who was, of course, the general manager of the Chiefs.
Sure,
band.
Sure.
And it said, congratulations, you've been drafted in the third round of the AFL redshirt draft. See you in Kansas City next year. And so somebody, of course, when he explained to me that since I was in two sports, I actually was eligible. If I stayed in school one more fall quarter, the quarter system, I could be on the football team one more fall quarter. And if I did that, I did well, there would be a chance I could be drafted by the NFL as well. So I decided to stay in school one more fall quarter. And the NFL then had a special draft. Over 30 of us, or 29 or 30 of us, that had been drafted as future draft choices in the AFL. And out of those 29, 30 people, I was the first pick. And Atlanta Falcons was brand new. It was actually after their first year, and I was picked by them. So now I had a choice to make between a weak NFL team, a new NFL team, and one of the absolute best AFL team. And the people that came out to see me was Bobby Bethard. He was a talent scout for us. That's before he went to Washington and San Diego became a general manager quite a bit before that. Our defensive lineman for the Chiefs, Tom Pratt, came out. Our personnel director, we call that then, head talent scout, was a guy called Tommy O'Boyle. He was with the Chiefs. He came out, and then Hank flew down to the game in Tulsa. We played Tulsa in 1966, the last game, and he saw me kick in warm-ups before the game. And he liked what he saw, and he was an impressive man for me to meet. And also I had met, right after that, the Chiefs flew me down to the Orange Bowl that played their last regular season game in 66 against the Dolphins before they went on to the championship game in Buffalo, which they won 31-7, and went and then, of course, went on to Super Bowl I against the Packers. So I actually ended up choosing the Chiefs and signed with them 3 or 4 weeks before Super Bowl I in late December. Actually, I signed in 1966. Super Bowl I was January 15th, in Los Angeles between the Chiefs and the Packers.
And what a memorable game that was. I mean, just a memorable game. And then 3 years later at Super Bowl IV, we played against the Minnesota Vikings, which was a team that you would later go on to play for.
Yeah, well, the Packers won the first two Super Bowls pretty convincingly. And it wasn't called Super Bowl then. It was called the World Championship of Professional
Football. Yeah, there we go.
It wasn't really called a Super Bowl until Super Bowl III. And that was a very important game because the Baltimore Colts were favored by 17, 18 points. And, of course, the Jets beat them 16-7. And then next year, the last total year AFL-NFL Super Bowl, the last one before the merger, and the AFL, they beat the Minnesota Vikings. They were underdogs by 13, 14 points. It spread changed a little bit during the week. And the main reason was because they were the AFL. Absolutely. We beat them. We beat them 23-7. That was the last AFL-NFL game. And I know Lamar was proud of that because the AFL-NFL games, the four Super Bowls before the merger, ended up 2-2.
Jan, there's actually, I was reading a few of your stats that you had in your football career, and I know that 96, you made 96.5% of all your field goal attempts, and because of that, NFL teams started go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's the point, and the reason it wasn't 100 points. I don't remember ever missing an extra point, you know, why. But there are a lot of kids blocked in those days. They're all blocked, the extra points. They count as a miss. And so I think my extra point percentage is like 96-something, you're right.
Yeah.
But I don't recall ever missing one outright. Now, keep in mind, the first few years, it was only a 10-yard kick.
Yeah.
The ball was on the goal line. You know, it's almost impossible to miss. They moved to 20, and I think all the misses were actually blocked or tipped. You kick from 7 yards deep, you know, they snap the ball from the line of scrimmage. Now they're back to 8 yards. Of course, you've got to snapper too, that's all he does. And he used to have the quarterback holding, so he didn't get a heck of a lot of practice during the season. But then in the late 70s, we start breaking in punters, and they also moved the spot back about 7.5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And of course, the last 30 years or so, it has been 8 yards deep. Because if you go further back, the corner, the outside guys have a better chance of blocking it. And also, if you go shorter than 7 yards, then if the tall defensive lineman get any kind of penetration, he can block the kick. So that's how it worked its way out. But my percentage in my early years, when the league averages in both leagues were hovering around 50%, I did quite a bit better than that. I think my rookie year was only like 21 out of 36, but I had 6 or 7 kicks blocked. But then the next 3 or 4 years, I kicked about 75% or so, where the league average wasn't much over 50. So I got off to a good start. There's no question about that.
Absolutely. Was there ever a time where you had missed a field goal in a high-pressure situation where the game was on the line?
I remember missing one my rookie year, and of course I missed one in my fifth year in an overtime game that it's been written about a hell of a lot, and I remember it very clearly. But most of the, other than that, I don't know how many game winners I actually have kicked in overtime. Or, of course, it wasn't overtime my first 7 or 8 years in the league. It ended in a tie, and I think kicked 25, 26, 27, you know, last minutes in the game. But I do remember, and I remember some of them, but I remember mainly the two that I missed, because you're expected to make them. So in my case, at least, I remember the good times, obviously, as well. But the one that sticks out is the one that you, when you don't get the job done.
So what is Jan Stenerud up to now these days after his football career?
Well, you know, in those days, during my football career, my first few years, I worked at Country Club Bank, in Kansas City. And for most of, for half of my career, I did that. Now, after football, I was hired by HNTB Corporation, the Howard Needles Company. They're mainly an engineering firm, very well known in the country for design of highway and bridging. They also design sports facilities. Now, the firm actually, in spite of some of the history has changed a little bit, people taking credit for certain projects, but Kibbutz Myers, which was merged with HNTB, actually were the architects of record of the Truman Sports Complex. And that was a company that I joined after I retired from football and worked for them for over 20 years. And then my business card said Director of Business Development, Sports Facilities Group. Mm-hmm. So my job was to find out around the country what college or pro team was looking to maybe build a new stadium. And most of the college teams were actually renovations of stadiums. I think in the Big Ten in the 80s and 90s, I think we renovated maybe 8 or 9 of the Big Ten schools. So they were big projects. But they also, I stayed on with the HNTB until just a few years ago and was a little bit involved even in the 49ers presentation, which we did. We did, HNTB was the architect for the 49ers business.
Mm.
And of course, also Denver Broncos. And now, most recently, after I retired, the firm HNTB is also the sports architect for the Raiders Stadium in Las Vegas. So I was with that firm for 23, 24 years after football, and I retired from then totally 6-7 years ago, and spending my time trying not to lose my golf game too quickly.
So do you miss playing football at all, or are you kind of glad that those days are somewhat over with?
Well, I was fortunate. I was, the Chiefs thought I was too old, or at least Marv Levy thought I was. And he let me go when I was 1980, but I still knew I could kick, and I ended up, 4 more years with the Packers and actually had my best years, because now we also start to pay more attention to working with the holder and the center. They'd start breaking in the punters and holders, and then more practice time and more practice fields, and also had special team coaches. So I had my best years statistically with the Packers and actually made the Packers Hall of Fame after only 4 years, and then Bart Starr was fired, replaced by Forrest Gregg, and Forrest traded me to Minnesota. And now I'm going indoor to the Metrodome, so in my 40s, when I'm 42, I make the Pro Bowl, and I think, gosh, I'm indoor. This is like stealing. I'm going to kick another 4 or 5 years. But then, so I got back for my 19th year, and I turned 43 that year. But I didn't have a good year. My back gave out in training camp, and I just tried to make it through, and I made it through okay. I didn't cost us in the game, so I didn't have a good season. But so to answer your question, I was 43 at that point and knew I just, there's no way I could do it anymore. So I had no problem with retiring. That it's totally different, I think, when people get hurt or injured at 27, 28 years old and can't do it anymore and probably miss it. So in my case, I knew there was no way I could do more than 19 years, and very grateful and thankful for that. So I have, I don't really miss it at all. I miss getting paid. That's about it.
Sure. I mean,
the way I get paid nowadays, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's unheard of anymore these days. Almost 20 years in the NFL for anybody. That's, you don't hear that much anymore.
Well, you have the one thing about kicking, you can do it physically, because no question about that. But there's only one spot on the field, and a lot of competition for those, I think when I started, with 22 or 23 pro football teams. Between the NFL and the AFL, of course, now it's 32. So my early years, there were 22 jobs in the country, and now it's only 32. And a lot of colleges, a lot of people, a lot of competition. In my early years, Hank would go to England. I remember after my rookie year, I kicked the longest field goal in, I think, in pro football, at least in the AFL, and most field goals. And I'm in Fort Polk, Louisiana, and basic training in the Army. And the first time I see a newspaper after 6 months, Hank is in England looking at the professional soccer players and rugby players and bring 3 of them back to camp. And so the competition was like that, basically, for 19 years. There was only 1 year ever that I didn't have any competition in camp. But that was the last year, my 19th year. And I needed it then because my back gave out actually on kickoff return practice and kickoff coverage practice. So you have to compete for your job.
Absolutely,
that's what you have to do. Other than that, physically, you should be able to kick into your 40s, and that's been proven by more people than me. George Brannan kicked was 48, I think.
That's true. Yeah.
And I think Bennett Morton Anderson, lasted until 46, I think, and then Atarius there too. But you have to be better than the people you're kicking against. And then even decisively better when you're older, because the salaries are going to be less for the young players as well.
So I have one more question, one more question for you, Jan. And so now that you're a football Hall of Famer, does the NFL take care of you or give you any special benefits or pensions for being a football Hall of Famer?
No, the Hall of Fame doesn't do anything special. Of course, the pension in football, in pro sports, are pretty decent. But I understand that the NBA and the Major League Baseball even have better pension. But we usually get a little bit of a hike every time they have a collective bargaining agreement again. So the pension, if you played a long time in the NFL, your pension is pretty decent. Now, the Hall of Fame provides you with some opportunities because since you are in the Hall of Fame, you are asked to maybe go to speak at certain functions or make an appearance or play in a golf tournament. And most of the time, they offer you an honorarium for being there. So from that standpoint, but they don't pay you just because you're in the Hall of Fame. But the NFL doesn't pay you just because you're Hall of Famer.
Sure, sure. I was just curious if they had any nice incentive packages for the Hall of Famers there.
No, but it offers you, usually a fee or an honorarium if you're asked to go places to speak or make an appearance, even play in the golf tournament, which is putting on some of the, during Super Bowl week, for example, corporate America, as you know, totally dominates Super Bowl week. And Chiefs fans got to experience that this year, and I've been through that for 25 years or so. And usually the Super Bowl for Hall of Famers is usually you get well rewarded for going to different functions or whatever. And also, I think the fans in Kansas City probably were surprised to see what happened to the ticket prices, hotel prices, and those type of things. But I've been watching that thing, happen for, a third of a century now.
Well, Jan, thank you so much for coming on my show, and thank you for your time here in Kansas City and for playing with us. It was very, very remarkable to watch you play.
Well, it's been a pleasure. It's so exciting. It's so exciting to see what's going on in Kansas City. Because when I got here, the people before me, they had laid the groundwork. They played in Super Bowl once. So when I got here in 1967, the old stadium was sold out. The new stadium was sold out. And so I respect the people before me that paved the way for me, certainly. And it's so much fun to be part of the Chiefs organization once again this year. It was so special. It was
absolutely.
I was like a fan that screams and yells and go crazy like everybody else.
Sure.
And to see the package that we have on the field these days.
The only bad thing was it took us 50 years, but hey, you know what? I'm not going to complain.
Well, don't worry. Listen, don't dwell on that. Dwell on what happened.
True. Well, Jan, thank you so much.
A lot of people have never been in the Super Bowl. They never come close to it. They lost four.
That's true. That's true.
And when I hear people talk about all the tough times, that's a waste of time. Let's celebrate the good things.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. That's good advice. Well, Jan, thank you so much for your time, sir.
My pleasure. You have a good evening.
You too, sir. Thank you.
Yeah.